C2A. Number 3A.
We come to point 22, which says that experiences are necessary. Also, this point we have to see clearly, namely that we say, well, if you study science, then science does not bring any suffering. That's the way of science. That's the way of harmony. And so, actually, we should not need to go through experiences. Well, we still can say that if Jesus had to go through it, apparently, then we have to go through them too. He didn't avoid them. He knew that there is a blessing in experiences, that there is a teaching in experiences, and therefore we have to accept to go through the Red Sea, through the wilderness, in order to reach the promised land. She even says here that love is not hasty to deliver us. That's quite interesting to see that, because our human attitude, in our ignorance, we feel that love should be very hasty to deliver us. It must be spontaneously. Every situation, every difficulty should really solve itself in a spontaneous way, right like this. That's one side of it. But another side of it is, when it is a matter of really bringing our whole human attitude to a higher tone, then usually that is a step-by-step process, a process that takes time. It's seldom that we have an experience like Saul, that in one moment he became Paul. But even that, you know, after that experience, Paul really took 14 years to think about that experience and think about it and investigating the Old Testament before he really went out into the world and preached his new gospel. So, love is not hasty to deliver us. We shall be tried and purified, says Mrs. Eddy. We must have trials and self-denials. We must have. She doesn't say you can have, but she said we must have. We never really grow so strong as when we go through an experience. When that happens, then we have really to pull up our socks and really get the appeal to the best within ourselves and really stick to what we know, and this makes us really strong, and that is necessary. We must have doubts and defeats, even doubts and defeats. We must have defeats. We grow when we are defeated. We then ask, why are we defeated? Something must be wrong that we can be defeated. We would not be defeated if we would be one with God. So we can learn a great lesson when we have these doubts and defeats. She says that we must go through sorrow and afflictions. Well, it's sometimes good to go through the text in a chapter and pick out those terms and those renderings so that we don't forget them, so that we don't just go over them because we don't like them. We can very often read the textbook and just pass over certain teachings in the textbook because fundamentally we don't like it, and so we think that if we don't like it and therefore don't investigate it, we have dealt with it, only then to experience that they come up again and again until we face it and really deal with it. Point 23 therefore says that we have to go through the experience and not shun them. That we should not shun the experience, not want to shun them, not want to go around it. We really should be a very straight shooter and really attack a question right away and look it into its face and say, what are you? And I'm going to see the truth about it. So, again, I just want to read you various renderings that Mrs. Eddy uses here in order to fortify within ourselves the decision, so to say, that we are no more going to go back on the situation, but that we are going right through the problem. We should not swerve, Mrs. Eddy says. We should overcome error in our daily walk and conversation and gain a little each day in the right direction. It's nice to see that she never demands that we do the job all at once, that she knows very well that it takes time, that it takes step by step, and she says, therefore, gain a little each day in the right direction. We cannot take heaven by storm as we would like to do, especially when one is a young student, one likes to take heaven by storm and say, well, that's easy, that I can do, I just have to put a little bit of, or a lot of time into the study and do it, and then I will do it in 1 year or so. We like to take heaven by storm, only to find out that mortal mind within us doesn't yield so easily as to be able to get into heaven just in one storm. Or, she said, we should make vigorous effort. Can you see the vigorous effort? As we go along with this chapter, you will feel that something within us grows which has the nature of toughness, which is strength, which is vigorous within ourselves. It's no more the sissy atmosphere of a scientist, the flowery pause of a scientist. We grow really within ourselves where we say, my word, we have to do the job, and we have to tackle that job properly and rightly, and we have to pull up our socks, and we have to be bold in our action and really do it. And you will feel that's the Christ within us that animates us, and the Christ is very powerful. We always know that the Christ is the power of the messianic work. And so she says we should not even become weary in well-doing. Just to go on and on and on and on we go and ever on. That's what the Christ pushes us to do. The impelling Christ that says, don't go back. That we are not to go back to error. Not, you see, like the Israelites in the wilderness, all they have always in their mind, let's go back to Egypt, to the flesh pots in Egypt. That was much nicer than to go through this awful wilderness. And Moses had a terrific job to take the whole gang and say, now, on we go, and on we go. We go forward, never go back, never go back to error. Never go back to beliefs outgrown. Don't go back to a religious sense of Christian Science. Don't go back to a blind belief in Christian Science. Go forward. Try to find the scientific aspect of Christian Science. And only then, really, you will win the crown. So that we become not a sluggard in the race. It says that we must have constant self-immolation, not constant aggrandizement, but constant self-immolation, where we begin to see the mortal sense has to be laid down, the personal sense has to be laid down, so that we make room for the idea of science. The idea of science cannot work through personal sense, and it cannot work through people and person. It only works through itself. Like only demonstrates itself through like. Can only work through the idea of science itself. So she says, take up arms against error at home and abroad. Not only at home, but also abroad. Christian Science is not just an individual salvation. If we restrict it to our individual salvation, we will see that we are not going very far, that we must take arms abroad, also abroad, that we see it's a collective idea, the collective demonstration because the arguments of mortal mind are collective. They are not individual. They existed long before man was on earth. The beliefs in death, in accident, in disease, was something that existed before man came down from the trees. That existed long before the mortal concept of sin existed. So we have to see that what we are engaged in is not our individual beliefs and individual errors, but in collective and universal beliefs and errors, and that we have to conquer them in order to make really science to achieve what it is intended to achieve. And therefore we should work the more earnestly in times of persecution, so that we don't give in, so that we don't become a sluggard, so that we don't give up and say, oh, it's too much for me, I can't do it. Well, that's not the way that Paul worked. When Paul was stoned and nearly dead, he just got up on his legs again, and on he went to the next city and started all over again, facing perhaps there that he was imprisoned. All right, imprisoned, so that's that. I find a solution, getting out of prison and just going to the next city and starting all over again. He couldn't be discouraged. He was really bragging in a wonderful sense, in a true sense, that error couldn't really lick him. He really worked the more earnestly, the more he was persecuted. And so finally, the point that she says that we should not think or even wish to escape the exalting ordeal of sin's revenge on its destroyer. That we should not even wish to get around the situation and say, how can I escape that situation? How can I get around it instead of going through it? Yes? Do you feel something of the strength of what makes up a Christian Scientist? Yeah? A terrific power sense comes in, because the Christ is that divine power that is able to overcome all the human errors at every point. And finally we come to point 24, rounding it up, saying, well, that every right effort has also its reward. That though we go through deep waters, through bitter experiences, through suffering, that we don't draw from that the conclusion, really, that there is no reward in doing right. And that Mrs. Eddy wants to bring in here, that really through vigorous efforts and suffering, we receive what? The efforts are crowned with success. So we can rely on that Christ idea, on that Christ law, that the Christ always will bring a true reward and the right reward, so that our efforts are not in vain. We can rely on that law, that all our trouble, our energies that are spent, our vigorous effort, that everything that we put into the idea of science is not in vain, even if for the moment, in a transitional period, momentarily, we don't see the reward. That's the point. Why is it so? We receive according to our deserving. So this is the law of justice and mercy, that we receive according to our deserving. We will gain the crown of rejoicing. We will gain it. We can rely on it. We become more spiritual and understand better what Jesus taught. So that's again the promise that we have. Or we are roused to an enlarged understanding of divine signs, that going through these experiences and through these sufferings, we become stronger and stronger and begin to see more what really Jesus was teaching and what is really an understanding of divine science. So here we get something very interesting, that usually we say, well, Understanding brings demonstration. That's one way of looking at it. That's the ascending way in science. That the more we understand, the more that understanding expresses itself as demonstration in our life experience. But the other way around is also true. In the descending way, we can see that the more we demonstrate and the more we stick really to the Christ idea, the more we begin to understand Jesus, the more the higher our understanding becomes. So really, a higher understanding is never just experienced by study and by devotional study and by trying to understand the idea of God better. It must be coupled with demonstration, and that demonstration gives us the certainty of understanding, the bigness of understanding. And so demonstration also leads to understanding. And very often Mrs. Eddy points out in the textbook that actually the disciples of Jesus only began to understand really what Jesus is through Jesus' demonstration. That demonstration teaches understanding. Yes, so that's what she says here, and then winds it up by saying, we may not receive, yes, up to this point I was quoting how Mrs. Eddy said that the reward is assured, that we have to see that we have not, that we should not doubt that our trials have no success, have no result, have no reward. The law of reward is assured. But the point is this, that humanly we have a human system of reference of time. We think that it must happen in time at once. But she sees the following. She says, we may not receive the reward in this world, as in the hereafter, we will reap what we now have sown. We must not forget that if we demonstrate something in science, then it's a demonstration in spiritual science, not in physical science. It means that the frame of reference within which these laws operate of cause and effect, of putting effort in something and getting a reward, that this law operates in a timeless sense, not in a time reference or in a time system of reference, which says, if I think something right, it should right away express itself in human experience, that the demonstration should show itself right away, or I haven't really made the demonstration. That's not what Mrs. Eddy sees. She sees that there is a reference of timelessness. Life is without beginning and without end. Therefore, reward that we get in life is not something that is in the framework of time. Therefore, it may be in the hereafter that we reap what we now have sown. And this we must not forget. We'll see that as we go through the text quite often, that we should naturally in science be thinking in life eternal and see the life experience within life eternal and not within the 70 years or 80 years of living here. Furthermore, she says, amid the smoke of battle, merit is not seen and appreciated by lookers on, not even by the one who leads the battle and who is in the battle and is the warrior. When the smoke of battle is on, one usually doesn't have a right perspective what is achieved in the battle. It's only usually afterwards when the smoke of battle settles itself and we get the bigger perspective of a thing It's usually only when we look back on our life, 10 years back, 20 years back, 30 years back, 40 years back, one begins to see what actually happened at that time. That's so true when you look at your life, and especially when you look at the development of your spiritual life, of the development of the spiritual idea within yourself, then by looking back, further back and back, you begin to realize that way back, perhaps 10 years, 20 years, 30, 40 years back, something very important has happened in your spiritual consciousness, which at that time perhaps you have only perceived as a battle, as a bitter experience, and then later on, 40 years later on, you say, that's the best thing that could ever happen to me. That was the very best thing. So you can see it is the perspective that really gives the true evaluation of a situation. And this is what we also have to see. Yes, this ends our 24 questions that we were considering. And we could see today really something very strong and powerful, namely that we could see if we go through a situation of suffering, that we can see the Christ, our spiritual selfhood, never suffers. That whatever the tribulation is, it never really touches our true identity, our true spiritual selfhood. It never touches it. It's only the mortal sense that has not weaned itself away well enough from a material sense of life that suffers. And therefore we should accept that and accept Christ's demands that bring to mortals suffering. So that through the bitter experience, as Mrs. Eddy says, we can rise higher. So this bitter experience is an occasion for rejoicing in tribulation, like Paul, and see that they are only indication of Christ's love for men that says, I don't let you go on in your life just doing always over and over the old errors. I want to save you, and in order to make you aware and wake you up to Christ's demands, I can't do any in any other way but to bring you suffering. Then you wake up. It's usually suffering that wakes people up and brings them to a higher altitude of consciousness. So all, Mrs. Eddy says, must drink that cup. All must accept it. We should not try to shun the experience, but face those experiences and see that even if love is not hasty to free us, that the law of reward is still at work. That reward may be in this world, it may be in the next world, it may be here, or it may be hereafter, but always here. No matter if it's the here or the hereafter, it's in the realm of life. Yes. Well, in this way, perhaps we have seen the general tone that the chapter wants to bring out. And having really felt these general tones, we can now reduce that general tone to more specific aspects of it. And therefore, I begin with the chapter Atonement and Eucharist, as it has been laid out in the study material. Either you have the blue book with the epitomes for the structure of the Christian Science textbook, which sooner or later you really should have, because as you go on with the further chapters, you may like to have these epitomes. So in these epitomes, on the first page, we have first the standpoint described of the chapter. The standpoint is the word reflecting the Christ. It means the accent is still on the word. The word is what? Is showing the nature of God, showing the perfect nature of God, just as in prayer. In prayer too, we had as a main standpoint a statement of God's perfect nature. But whereas in prayer we had the approach through the word, namely how we approach God, here in the second chapter we have a touch of the Christ. That word is shown from the standpoint also of the Christ, namely that word of God has a Christ which says that it casts out all that is unlike God. So it casts out all that is unlike God's nature in us. It is that unlikeness of God's nature in us that has brought the separation between God and man, and the atonement is that which gets rid of that un-godlike nature in us. So the whole chapter will show how we get rid of the nature that is not like God in us, that the divine has to overcome the human at every point, that truth really must be experienced as overcoming error. So this is the great attitude or standpoint of word as Christ. Let us see again what it means. When we had the word in the chapter on prayer, from the absolute standpoint, naturally again, we had a statement of God's perfect nature. We were introduced right in the first page there in the nature of God, that God is mind, that God is spirit, that God is unchanging soul, that God has a science principle, that God is life, that it is a source that already gives us more than what we accept, that God is truth, that God is truth, that is already doing right before we ask him to do something, that God is love, that in love everything is already at the point of fulfillment, and that we only have to avail ourselves of the rule of God. So, whereas the chapter on prayer already had shown the whole nature of God, but then showed that here that whole nature of God has a Christ. And that Christ always shows that the nature of God therefore overcomes all that which is not of the nature of God. It casts out all that is unlike God's nature in us. In us. It's constantly in us. Because prayer is something that goes on in us. And so the ungodlike in us has to be overcome. So that Christ really demands that we comply with everything that is with the nature of God and lay down the opposite.